broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
Hey, very good morning, guys, and happy lockdown 3.0. How are you all coping there in Melbourne?
Bit dusty. Happy is the right word.
Yeah, well, at least the Pies had a win last night.
Yeah. It's a bit of a novelty for you guys.
Yeah, thanks,
Louis.
I'm feeling, I'm feeling literally locked down and constrained and restrained and not able to do the usual things. But it's a roller coaster. I must have slept well because this morning I'm feeling a bit upbeat. But yesterday you could have asked me and I would have said, just don't talk to me today.
Yeah, it's a really hard one, isn't it? I think you do go in waves of it and how you feel. And, you know, sometimes you're really angry and then sometimes you go through, you know, being really positive that you can stay at home in your house. And, yeah, it is what you said, Louis, a complete roller coaster of emotions throughout this period. So.
And what's life like up in sunny Queensland, hun?
Well, it's not sunny today, so that might make you guys feel a little bit better. I do get my weekends, which is a good thing. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, when you're working from home anyway, you are spending the bulk amount of time in kind of a lockdown situation. The only difference is that you can go out and get a coffee. But I would say that businesses have really sort of put the pressure on staff at the moment to really sort of outperform in isolation rather than sort of scaling back. So I think it's a hard one for everyone to adjust to because people are trying to justify their jobs and their roles and do the best that they can to make sure that the company is knowing that they're working pretty hard.
Yeah. Yep, indeed. Well, I guess one of the things as a business owner is you're quite anxious about still ensuring that the business continues to perform.
Yeah.
And maybe in some instances you're overcompensating for that anxiousness because let's be honest, this is the worst recession that we've seen since 1983. This is worse than the 1991 recession, which was apparently a doozy. And right now, it's looking like it's going to be the longest recession here in Australia since 1983 and probably the deepest since then as well. So, you know, many businesses are anxious and whether or not they're going to be able to survive, be able to reinvest back within their businesses to open back up again. Remember, when you shut down, there's also a ramp up period that needs to happen. And I don't think anyone's expecting, you know, business activity to just turn straight back on once we come out of this lockdown.
Talking about the fact that this would be a massive depression had we not had all this government money sort of being put out there. What do you think the long-term implications are of this now that, you know, we're just doing these handouts left, right and centre? Where's it going to go?
Oh, look, I don't think here in Australia, I think we're better positioned than most other places around the world, just given that we had a much stronger financial position going into this crisis. So there's every chance that we can manage our way through this, but it's going to take a hell of a long time to work that debt level down that we've just accumulated in such a short period of time. But we are seeing, you know, we're seeing precious metals go through the roof right now. Gold is now at an all-time new high in US dollar terms. And that's because we're seeing all of this new money created that is being given to governments to support their economies. And there's a real concern, I guess, at some point in time, there's going to be a day of reckoning. You know, many countries around the world are not in very healthy positions, even leading into this crisis. And, you know, at some point in time, you just think that, I don't know what it is that breaks it, but at some point in time, we're probably going to have to deal with another crisis. A lot of the times you find that the solutions to the last crisis are the causes of the next crisis. So we will just have to see.
Yeah. And Dan Andrews has said that there is no stage 5 or So what do you guys think of that, Joel? I know that you have very strong feelings towards Dan Andrew, and you have a little bit to say about how it's all gone.
I mean, you know, we've got an Andrews government who, you know, has completely bungled this whole management of the quarantining of returned travellers. In fact, it's been said that almost every case that is being experienced in New South Wales, Victoria, and even Queensland could be traced back to an outbreak, to the outbreaks that occurred at the Victorian hotel quarantine. Now, remember, this prick and his cronies knocked back the AFP, knocked back the Vic Police, knocked back the Defence Force to manage this hotel quarantine, all in favour of giving a private security firm, you know, the responsibility of looking after the most sensitive issue that we were faced with at that time. We then find out this guy gave this job to the private security firms because a big union that is a big supporter of the Labor Party, you know, was pushing for it. We then find that these same security guards were overseen by not DHS, but Parks Victoria was responsible for looking after the security guards on the actual ground. DHS, yes, was overseeing it. And Parks Victoria actually pulled their staff out because they were concerned about what was going on and the safety of what was happening in the hotel quarantine.
And was that an Andrew's decision to put Parks Victoria in charge of that?
Of course it would have been. I mean, yeah. At the end of the day, they run the government, you know. And then we allow these security guards who have failed to be trained appropriately to go and, fraternise and get it on with the people that were quarantining. And then we then allow this to get out into society, and then we find out that when we have these positive tests in the community transmissions,
that's
we're finding
where we stem from.
Yeah, and then we're finding that of the 3,000 people that were door knocked to see who were actually tested positive, 800 of them weren't actually at home when they were supposed to be. So not one of them was fined. And then, in fact, we actually find out that they actually allowed these people to get out into society and exercise while they tested positive. I mean, this is just madness. And not one of them was fined. And then we find out that we're allowed to have a Black Lives Matter protest where not one of those people were fined. Maybe I think there was one or two people who actually organized the protest. You know, and then we find 2 or 3 weeks later, we see that cases start escalating. Not only that, we then find out that Daniel Andrews didn't even want the Defence Force to help him try and curtail it once it did get out into the community. Multiple times he requested assistance. And if that's not worse enough, we then find that we've got this outbreak in the aged care facilities. Now, this aged care facility, right, you're trying to protect the most vulnerable people in our society. Yet you allow staff who work at these aged care facilities to go in there and work without being tested as to whether or not they even had COVID-19. And not only that, you allow them to move around from facility to facility to facility, potentially spreading it. No wonder we've got 100 different facilities that have got this thing running rampant and we've got so many people dying. And not only that, the hotel quarantining, you allow these people who actually were in the quarantine to leave after 14 days, refusing to actually have a quarantine test. I mean, if you want to have a look at why this is such a mess, you've got one place to look at. And not only that, this is all happening at a time where Adam Somurek was found out to be branch stacked. And we don't even know if this government is legally, has actually attained their power through legal means, or at least the power that they control and the amount of power they control in parliament is by legitimate means. And then we have this where they're shutting down any parliamentary inquiry, or they're refusing to answer any questions under the guise of some bullshit judicial inquiry so they don't have to answer the hard questions. They've suspended parliament. The only time that they actually were able, where we've actually had a parliamentary question time was this week. And Jenny Markakos just dodged and weaved and failed to answer any questions, saying that she would get back to them in a written response. No, you answer the questions in Parliament because that's what Parliament's there for. Yeah, look, I'm pissed off because we then get lectured every day by this clown telling us that we need to be responsible. We need to be the ones that have got to be, you know, doing the right thing. Yet this guy's taken no responsibility for his not one, not two, not three, but multiple failings to protect this state and protect the rest of Australia. And now we're all wearing this consequence And we've got no means to have any form of retribution or accountability. And we just have to continue to put up with this. I mean, Andrews, Mikakos, they should resign immediately.
What's your thoughts, Louis? I mean, do you have a differing opinion, or what do you think about the whole situation? Was it an honest mistake that he's never gone through something like this before and obviously thought that it would go a different way?
My feelings are maybe not as strong as Joel's, but I agree that it stinks. There's a few things on the margins where I'd maybe have a different opinion to Joel, and some of those things are not bigger influences in my book, but I'm 90% there, Joel. It's so infuriating that the level of incompetence was allowed to occur, and look at the consequences of it. The stage four restrictions are estimated to cost $9 billion. Wow. to the Victorian economy, or the Australian economy, or whatever it is. And that's on top of the stage three restrictions that were going to be estimated at $6 billion, although they ended soon to be sooner than anticipated to be replaced with stage four, because it wasn't coming under control. But I also get really frustrated at the community for what Joel said of 3,000 people who are positive cases, for a quarter of them not to stay in your friggin' house. I mean, how selfish are you going to be? You've got coronavirus. You've got the disease, which is the global pandemic. Oh, I might just go outside for a walk.
Yeah.
I am just gobsmacked that people in our community in Melbourne would be so selfish and so ignorant and arrogant to do that kind of behaviour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Brett? What's your take on the whole scenario?
Oh, I think it's a farce that they've allowed this to happen. As Joel alluded to, the biggest reason Victoria is in stage four lockdown at the moment is because of that hotel quarantine debacle. A lot of the other issues have been sort of swept aside because this has become so rife. But yeah, there needs to be greater accountability. They made the wrong decisions at the wrong time. The other states brought in the military, heeded the warnings, put some really strict conditions and penalties around it, yet we've failed to act in the same way, and therefore we're all suffering now.
Yeah.
I know there's going to be a lot of people pissed off about this. There already is, and I think it's only going to get worse as 6 weeks of lockdown starts to take toll.
I'm just curious. I mean, surely there's got to be some lawyers out there getting ready for some form of class action. I mean, you know, if this judicial inquiry, you know, comes out and proves that the Andrews government had completely bungled this, then I would suspect that there would be grounds for many many businesses, many people to sue the state government for you know, adverse consequences that they've suffered.
I must say, you know, I've been in New South Wales while this is going on, and Queensland, and I have seen a very, very different way in which they've handled it. I think the contract tracing, certainly in New South Wales, I think they were incredibly efficient with getting that under control when they had those breakouts. I know that it started to spread, but they were so efficient with the contract tracing and making sure that they had followed up every single person. And it seems in Victoria, it's just was a wildfire that just kept spreading.
Not just that. I mean, I know there's been issues with this COVID-19 app, but we find out that that they even stopped using the COVID-19 app to help them trace things, and then they've figured out that, oh no, actually it does help, we better start using it again.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like they're running around like headless chooks, not actually understanding what they're doing. I mean, how on earth are we supposed to feel, you know, anywhere near, you know, upbeat or optimistic around what the future looks like when we've still got the people who created this mess trying to solve it, and they've given us no reason to believe that they've got the capability to be able to solve it.
Mm. Well, what do you think? I mean, the numbers have sort of gone up, and then they've come back just a little bit, and, you know, it's not a huge, we're not seeing a major drop yet in the figures. Do you think this is going to be extended, this lockdown? What's your thoughts?
Almost certainly, probably.
Because we're in the early stages, I mean, 6 weeks is a fairly long time. If everyone adheres to it, those numbers have to drop.
Yeah.
But I guess we need to wait and see that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's it like? I mean, wearing a face mask, is there any talk of them at the end of this stage four, talking about them, you know, taking that away, or is it going to be something that the Victorians will have to deal with going forward for quite a long time?
I think we should expect face masks for the rest of the year, and I think we should expect working from home where people can do so, certainly to the end of the year. But I'd be saying you got to be looking towards a vaccine, and we're now 4 months to the end of the year, this being the start of August, 5 months to the end of the year. We're not going to have a vaccinated population by the end of this year. You're looking mid-next year, maybe late next year, on optimistic forecasts, remembering that there's never been the production of a vaccine in quicker than 5 years.
That's another issue that's sort of certainly been bantered around amongst my friendship circle, is it whether or not people would actually take a vaccine if it became available. A lot of people have a lot of fear around something that's been developed that quickly and feel that, you know, there's, even though with a couple of months of testing, they're not sure that they really want to do that and put that into their body.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they'll find a way to give people the Godfather option, give them a choice that they can't refuse.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, though. I think people do have rights to choose whether they do or don't want to do it. So I just think there's going to be a hell of a lot of the population that says no, particularly amongst the younger generation.
Yep. You might find something like the pressure coming from the private health insurers or even the Medicare system, where you have to pay for your hospital stay if you're unvaccinated.
Yeah.
Or you can't have private health insurance if you're unvaccinated. I don't know, but I'm sure there's going to be something in the system that will gently encourage people to be vaccinated when a vaccine is available.
Would you vaccinate your daughter?
Absolutely. I'm 100% for vaccinations. Mm. The so-called studies which have concerns around vaccinations are debunked.
Yep.
Fact news.
Yep. What do you think, Joel? You get vaccinated?
Look, if it meant that we could open up and go back to some sort of sense of normality, I suspect I probably would. But I guess, look, I'm not fearful about the virus, and maybe I should be. But, you know, if you look at the studies, I'm actually in a very safe age group. You know, those people who are most vulnerable are those that are sort of over the age of 65. You know, the evidence suggests that by and large, people in my age group, unless you have some underlying sort of health condition, you're generally going to get not much more than a runny nose. Yeah, for me,
it really depends on your body and how the virus affects it. You know, I know that the bulk of people in our age bracket know, but you know, there's always a little bit of a worry. I think about, I wouldn't want to get it personally.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to get it because of that. The potential for it to be debilitating more long term. There are some people who have effects 3 months later and still have the fatigue and the brain fog. And that's where, as a society, the consequence is one thing from a public health perspective, but as an individual, it's another set of impacts. So the people managing the public health and the government might have this idea of letting the virus infect a certain number of people and that being okay, whereas a person as an individual, they probably don't want to be the one allowed to be infected. So you've got this difference between what's okay for public health not being the same as what's okay for the individual.
What's the end game, right? Like, let's assume that, you know, a vaccine is 5 years away. What are we going to do? Just continually lock things down? I mean, it's out now in society. The cat's out of the bag. What are you going to do? Just continually shut the economy down every time we get a flare-up? I can't help thinking that, you know, we need to be using more of a scalpel rather than a sledgehammer. And, you know, yes, we need to be looking at ways to protect the vulnerable. But, you know, I still believe that, you know, we're probably going to have to just live with this thing, right? And, you know, what do? Do we continue to have no sports? Do we continue to have no parties, no funerals, no weddings?
They tried the scalpel and it didn't work. And I think that comes down to the fact that 25% of people with the virus weren't actually staying at home. Yeah. I think the scalpel can work where people are compliant. And the reason why China has been able to manage their side of things is because their population is compliant. Because they've got they carry a bigger stick than we do. But we've now seen that Dan Andrews has picked up a slightly bigger stick, and has now banned the exercise and made it more of a directive, so that people in future will be fined if they're not quarantining. So the stick's getting bigger, but it's got to happen after the current round of lockdown goes through. It's those community transfers which need to come down. And if they can come down, then everything can be contained and we can go back to a suppression strategy. And if the suppression strategy works well, which it was doing apart from the hotel quarantine breaches, that suppression strategy we can see can actually lead to close to elimination.
Yeah, and I'm just hoping too that with people you know, that have been lax with going out and, you know, they've had coronavirus and are out in the you know, exercising or in the community, that it just changes their perspective a little bit, because I'm sure now they're thinking, I don't want to be in another lockdown forever. I'm sure it's got to be having an impact on those people as well. So let's hope they do the right thing. Who knows how this thing is going to play out? I think it's anyone's guess what the long-term future of it is.
Yeah, so I think next year we'll see either a vaccination or we will see suppression become elimination in Australia.
Yeah.
I don't think the rest of the world has that luxury since they're not an island.
I agree, yeah. Well, guys, we're going to take a very short break and we're going to come back with a topic that's going to sort of flow on from here, and that's just talking about, you know, how you can look after your mental health and things that you can do during the lockdown period to make yourself feel that little bit better. So we'll be back with Louis after the break.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Welcome back, guys. Now, Louis, what can you tell us? What are some of your tips to make our life a little bit more engaging and exciting during lockdown period, and what can we do for our mental health?
Thanks, Steph. You can call me the Silver Linings Playbook today, because it's been pointed out that there can be good outcomes for it, for the lockdown. I'm pretty depressed when I think about it, to be perfectly honest about the situation that we're in. But part of having good mental health is to, yes, acknowledge what's going on and not be an optimist in denial of the situation. But to look for, now that we're in this situation, what are the things that I can look for that are actually nice or have a nice outlook or the positive sides to it? Now, having gone through the first lockdown, I'm sure everyone is aware and has personally experienced some negative habits that can creep into our lifestyle. I know that most people's eating habits changed, perhaps drinking habits too. They're the most obvious one. So it's very easy when we go through a period of change, our routines are turned upside down. So what I'm looking for is, what is a new positive routine that we can take? A negative routine would be to not include any exercise where you used to do exercise. And that's because you've lost all of your trigger habits. If you read the book by Charles Duhigg called The Power of Habit, it explains the chain of events that go into any habit, whether it's a negative habit like smoking or a positive habit like exercise. Before you do the exercise, there is something which you do, which is not exercise itself, but it triggers the exercise behavior. For me, when I was exercising every day, I would do it at nighttime. So my routine was, I have my dinner and then I get changed. And then as soon as my daughter's in bed, well, I'm already in my gym clothes, I'm fed, I'm watered, I'm ready to go, and then I'm out the door to the gym. So the trigger habit was there to set up, which then led me to doing the exercise. Now that our lives are up in the air, we need to find new triggers for our new habits. So if you're trying to get a daily walk into your routine, then what's your trigger? And what you need to do is you need to bookend it onto something which you do every day. For example, everyone wakes up every day. So maybe your new routine is to back it onto waking up first thing in the morning, or backing it onto a meal. If you eat breakfast every day, well, then maybe that should be your trigger. So you finish your breakfast and then you put your shoes on, or you put your shoes on before breakfast, which is even better. If you've already got the clothes on and then you have your meal, you're one step closer to getting out the door.
Yeah.
So look for what is your trigger and what are the things that already happen every day, and converting one of those things or stacking a positive activity onto the back of that. So the types of activities that you could have is things for your physical health, your mental health, and it could be hobbies, and I'm going to throw one in there for learning as well. So for your physical health is just getting a bit of exercise. But the other thing is eating well. So maybe you've started to actually do online grocery shopping instead of going into the grocery store, and maybe you're now doing a plan of what meals that you're cooking at home, because a lot of people are doing a lot more home cooking. Or maybe it's just a better snack for the afternoon, and a healthy snack becomes your afternoon habit instead of a packet of biscuits, and I'm guilty of that one. Or for your mental health, it could be taking up meditation, or just taking time out, a 15-minute window where you stand outside your front door and breathe the fresh air.
Yeah.
It could be a new hobby that you take up. I think evening time needs to be something that people are a bit more aware of. And if you've already been at home all day staring at a computer screen, then sitting on your couch and staring at a television is maybe not something which feels the same or gets the same level of relaxation anymore. I have heard that Australia has been sold out of sewing machines.
Gosh. Really? People must be really bored then, because I would not be buying a sewing machine.
No, but there's enough people that do. I imagine there's not a huge supply of them. I'm guessing there were not millions of sewing machines in the warehouses. But things for hobbies can be in short supply because people are taking them up. I've also seen a shortage of bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever hobby you can back onto something that you're already doing, if you back that onto dinner, that you do half hour of something like that, well, then you back that into your new series of habits.
I was going to ask, though, a habit's really important, but when you're feeling not motivated about anything, how do you even start getting into that habit? Because sometimes you just go, oh, I'll let it go. I just can't be bothered. You know I've been in that situation where I just can't even drag myself mentally to get myself organized, or, you know, the thought of putting on shoes to go for a walk or anything is just too hard.
Steph, I think one of the best things for mental health and for people to actually commit to something is to have a purpose and an outcome that they're striving towards.
Yeah.
I think as we're going through this lockdown, especially in Victoria, it's easy for people to get depressed, but I think they need to keep in mind that this will pass and there's going to be an opportunity at the end of it to do something. There's still a reason to look forward to. You've just got to find it and figure out what it is for each person and plan and prepare for that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things people could do throughout this period is look at upskilling, start to look at what they want to be at the end of this lockdown that will have them in a better position for employment, businesses, opportunities. You know, learn some extra marketing, maybe some digital design, whatever it is that's relevant to the future you want, and focus on that through this period, because you might not get the chance to do it again.
Yeah, that's a good one.
For people who are now doing a lot more cooking from home, you've also got a lot more dishes to wash. So my big tip is to put on a set of headphones while you're doing dishes and listen to an audiobook. And I've certainly been benefiting from that. Gets me a half hour or 45 minutes of reading time while I'm doing the dishes. So I'm not missing out on anything and it's not taking me any extra time. But Steph, to come back to your question, what do you do when you don't feel like doing the activity? I'm dead serious. You got to lie to yourself. So if you're trying to go for a walk after breakfast, then what you should do is you should put on your clothes and your shoes before breakfast and you lie to yourself. You're not putting on those clothes and shoes to go for a walk. You're just putting on clothes and shoes.
Actually, I think that particular, like actually getting dressed is another one that I would say, certainly in the first round of lockdown when I was at home, I was sitting around in my pajamas, which is the absolute worst thing I think you can do because it doesn't really start your day. You feel like a slob. You feel like, you know, you didn't, you know, have any care to yourself. And it's just a funny one, that action of actually getting ready in the morning and, you know, doing your hair and, you know, putting on clothes, I think has another big change to people's mindset.
Yep, absolutely. It sure does because it's a series of actions which your brain is hardwired to already know that it leads to a different sort of series for the day, a different set of actions and a different way of thinking for the rest of the day.
Yeah,
100% agree that what you wear has a huge impact on how you feel. Brett, I'll come back to what you've said on the learning side of things. There is so much material out there for learning and development. Every learning institution has now pivoted to online courses, and there is so much that you can do for learning. If you want to sit down and watch a series of videos or do some reading or do some listening or take on some one-on-one coaching, the world has gone bananas for learning. And if you can pick up a half hour a day after dinner, you're going to do huge things for your career in marketing or administration or skills or management or sales or negotiation or there's a book on improving anything.
Yeah. Really good advice, Louis. I think that, you know, I think that's a positive out of the whole lockdown scenario. All right. Well, look, guys, we're going to take another quick break and we're going to come back and have our final topic with Brett for the day.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03 8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au. and book your appointment today.
Welcome back, guys. Now, Brett, you've got some data that you wanted to share with us on housing.
Yeah, it's the first week of the month, so every month CoreLogic release the data from the previous month to say what's been happening across the residential property market. So just quickly touch on it and cover off what's been going on. The biggest thing that everyone looks for in this report when it comes out is what's it saying the values are doing across the country. So the residential housing value, dwelling value across the country dropped 1.6% over the last 3 months. So not a huge drop in terms of, you know, some of the reports we've been hearing that are forecasting a massive drop, but a drop none the same and probably expected. But it's really just a blip, like 1.6%. It's virtually flat, as we've been talking about in previous episodes. That 1.6% is across the whole country, so national cities and regional areas and all dwelling types. They have a different metric for capital city values. When I say a different metric, they measure the capital city values as a portion of that, and the capital cities were actually slightly worse with a 2% drop. So regional areas have held their values slightly better than the capitals. For just the last month, though, the capitals have dropped just on 0.8%. So we're seeing slight declines. Everyone's forecasting this will continue, but they're not significant declines that should cause any panic at this stage. The one outlier in a lot of this, though, was the ACT, where their dwelling values are actually up 1.3% for the last 3 months. So right. Whilst the majority of the country's dropped, the ACT has actually improved.
Let's face it, none of the politicians are taking a pay cut right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. And in fact, they're probably asking for pay rises because they're having to work for a living.
Yeah. or the government sector.
Yeah.
None of them are shutting down.
None of them are shutting.
Well, there's bitterness there.
The other part of the data that comes out is the volumes of sales. So they had a massive drop in April, dropping 34% across the country as restrictions came around in pretty much every state. But they rose around 14% in July. Interestingly, we think that'll probably decline again, especially in the view of the lockdown in Victoria, where there won't be any auctions open for inspections, are virtually going to be banned as well. So it'll be pretty hard for people to go to market in Victoria for the next month or so. So we'd anticipate volumes dropping again. And the time it's taking to sell a property is increased slightly to around 49 days in the capital cities, up from 42 the previous month. No major changes in any of these other than the volumes, so still a pretty flat market. Rental values across the country are up around 0.5% for the year, but they're down 0.7% from the period of March through to July. Okay. So declines in rental values, probably in line with the declines in sales values for the last few months.
Hey, Brett, I was going to ask you, you've always been quite optimistic about house data and that it's not going to keep falling. Do you still feel that way after this sort of lockdown as well, and the potential for this to be ongoing, for particularly for Victoria?
The biggest challenge with all of this, in my opinion, has been how long it lasts and what the impact is on the economy. Because I think the property values are so closely linked to unemployment, immigration, and how the overall economy performs. So the longer this lasts, the more property is going to be impacted. Yeah. The property market as a whole prior to COVID-19 was really fundamentally sound, even though we had high pricing and higher values than we've ever had. We had ridiculously low mortgage rates. In fact, I just saw today as well that another record mortgage rate at 1.98% has right. come about. So it was 1.99 was the lowest we'd heard. Someone's picked them to 1.98. So wow. We've still got record low interest rates, and that's going to persevere for, I would say, potentially the next 5 years. We're going to have these low interest rates that'll underpin the property market to some degree. But if people don't have jobs and they can't service mortgages and we're not letting new people in the border, well, the supply-demand equation will have to be impacted and values will fall. I think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
The challenge is to see how much and whether it's going to be in all areas across all markets.
Interesting. All right. Well, it's another watch this space, isn't it? It's just one of those things that you're just looking for a crystal ball to know what's going to happen. So I guess we just all have to hang in there and wait. So.
Yep. But again, if people are investing in residential property, typically, and as we say, if you're investing in this, it's a long-term investment, minimum 10 years if you're going to be an investor in a residential property. So if we look 10 years down the track, let's assume that the flow-on effect, if a vaccine or, some sort of workable solution to COVID-19 comes about to allow us to resume activities, the economy will recover over the 2 to 3 years after that. Looking beyond that, there's no reason real estate can't get beyond where it is now in the next 10 years. In fact, I would be, if I was placing a bet on it, I would bet on the positive side that property values in 10 years will be higher than what they are now.
You can't measure the pent-up demand. So people who have wanted to get into the property market for a long time, and we've seen it previously when Melbourne and Sydney went through big booms, but then the property market dropped off a little bit. It didn't drop very far because there was all these people who had missed out on getting into the property market, had wanted to get in for maybe 3 or 4 years, and then as soon as there's a 5% or 10% correction, they think, aha, now's my time, and now they come out and they support house prices. Yeah. But it's very hard to measure how much pent-up demand there is.
Brett, just one that's sort of, dear to my heart, Melbourne CBD, we did discuss this in the last podcast, we're a city that really, you know, people come into the city to live their life. We're not like Sydney where we go out to the suburbs or anything like that. These lockdowns are having such a major impact on all of the businesses in the CBD. What do you think about the rental market for Melbourne CBD as a whole going forward? Is this really going to feel the pinch for them? You know, because we're not going to return to life as we know it, especially with more and more people working from home.
Well, so there's the two parts to the CBD. Obviously, the majority of the CBD is still commercial, but there is a lot of residential around Melbourne CBD. The challenge for the Melbourne CBD residential market is there's almost two markets of that as well. You've got your more affordable, smaller apartments, which is typically taken up by students and new immigrants. And I think that's really going to be hurting because there's still a little bit of new supply to come on, but we're not allowing new students to come in. Students that would have taken up a lot of this are potentially staying back at home, if they're from other cities or other states and of course, from overseas. So I think we're going to see that the CBD market's going to be hit with reasonably high vacancies until a lot of those universities can open again and immigration starts up. There's still obviously another part to that, which is people like yourself, Steph, that live in the city for a lifestyle choice and aren't, you know, you're looking at a different type of dwelling, probably a more luxurious or a bigger apartment in a nicer building. Mm. I think there's a different market there, but it will still be impacted because pricing, once vacancies start to come about, it does tend to have a flow-on effect where people will move around to where they can find a better deal.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Interesting. I feel sort of sorry for those people too that have invested in rentals in the CBD because I just think the life is going to take a really long time to restore itself. You know, for all those restaurants and businesses and, you know, the absolute livelihood of the city that we once had.
Well, I think the commercial space is going to be the one that's going to be hit even harder over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Mainly because of the new supply that's coming on. I saw a stat that currently Melbourne has around 32,000 square metres available, but it's going to get up to potentially 235,000 square metres in the next 2 years with new supply coming on board. And if businesses aren't coming back into the CBD, if they're not able to take up office space or it's not working for them, that's a lot of office space. It's going to be sitting there and then everyone will want to get some sort of return, so prices will drop on rentals.
Mm-hmm. And certainly a lot for my own business, we're starting to talk about doing either 3 days in the office or 2 days at home. So, you know, just pulling back on the amount of people that will be in there long term. And this is just for the future, not just the lockdown period or when we go back to, you know, a stage three restrictions. People are really thinking about this long term of having more flexibility and staying at home for a couple of days a week and coming in when they really need those heavy meeting days.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see whether, you know, space is actually, you know, reduced quite a lot for these larger companies.
I think that's a wait and see as well. I can understand that there's a lot of intent towards that at the moment because people have seen how costs could be reduced and, you know, the opportunity for people to have less transit time and potential productivity upsides. I still think that we don't know because we're in an environment where we're forced to do it and we can't do a lot outside, stay at home, so therefore we will be productive. I think if all normal activities resumed, we may be looking at it a bit differently. People might have a different perspective. You know, if you've got employees that are allowed to work from home but they can also easily get out and go to the shops or go to a restaurant, they might not be as productive because they can be a little bit more lax with how they spend their time.
Yeah, there's certainly been quite a few cases across the other states where you know, staff that have been asked to return to work are refusing or don't want to do it you know, because they've gotten so used to that lifestyle. So it's going to be a really hard thing, I think, to peel this back, though, as well. I think a lot of people have gotten used to just that little bit more freedom of being in their own homes. But long term, I think I wouldn't mind having a day or two working from my home office.
I think a lot of people in their jobs are working productively because they're working on adrenaline. There's so much change happening in workplaces and people are so motivated or stressed to keep being productive and address these short-term issues and these short-term problems. When it becomes a longer-term situation and it doesn't have that that short-term focus and that adrenaline and stress that comes with it, I think you're talking about a very different set of motivations that will keep people working efficiently. I'm not sure that all the businesses that are talking about working from home permanently in future will have success.
I agree. I think it's those jobs really, Louis, I think that you can measure someone's performance very clearly on, whether that's, you know, the number, like call centres and the number of calls that people can take, or hitting sales targets and things like that. I think those types of industries, you know, you can't fudge the numbers, but for other people, yes, it's harder. It's definitely harder to check what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, interesting topics. We're going to have to finish up there for today and go to our last segment for the day, which is You Can't Be Serious. Who would like to kick off today's session? Joel.
Well, I've got a curious case of by name, by nature, in the Scottish Premier League, Ross County is living the Ross by name, Ross by nature ethos. It has just added a new goalkeeper, Ross Doohan, to its roster, which goes along with the other two goalkeepers being Ross Laidlaw and Ross Munro.
Any more?
Look, I've got a coming of age story that's gone wrong. Well, I'd call it a coming of age. It's that time when a son becomes stronger than his father. And the consequences of that. So in Boone County, Kentucky, a father entered into multiple arm wrestling matches with his son and lost them all. And it didn't take it so well. In fact, police were called when he got out a gun and started shooting up the stairs to chase his son away. Oh.
Wow. He must have been in lockdown.
Yeah. didn't like the fact that his sibling has become stronger than him.
Wouldn't want to be his sibling.
I just wanted to point out a piece of news that might have been missed. SpaceX, the company which has been able to work on the reusable rocket going up to the space station and then back down. They managed to bring some astronauts down for the first time with them, not in a re-landing rocket, but in one of their in a regular capsule. But it's the first time for SpaceX and marks another milestone in the space program for SpaceX. I just thought that was worth being a bit excited about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah,
well, we might have to find another planet to colonize, given that coronavirus is
over the planet.
It's true.
Need a fair bit of money to head over to another planet, I think. But let's see how that goes.
14-day quarantine, please.
Maybe we could send all the people with coronavirus there.
Yes.
Do that too.
We could put them on an island, like what we did with the HIV people.
Oh. Charming. Always one for a last-minute comment there, Joel. Anyway, on that note, I hope you all stay safe and sane during this next week of lockdown, and we'll speak to you all again next Friday. Have a fabulous weekend, and I hope that you practice those resilience tips and find ways to keep yourself together.
Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Steph.
Good one, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.